You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for February 28th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the CPAC Avoiding Rape Talk for Dummies breakout session, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Yeah, but they don't want to avoid talking about rape.
Well, apparently not. There's a Maine elected official in the state of Maine who just got elected to some statewide office.
Uh-huh.
And a pesky blogger, according to Wonkette,
yes,
discovered this quote from him from 1995. If a woman has a right to abortion, why shouldn't a man be free to use his superior strength to force himself on a woman? At least the rapist's pursuit of sexual freedom doesn't, in most cases, result in anyone's death.
Yeah.
So that's...
It was the 90s, honey. A lot of crazy talk going on, you know. Yeah.
I want to start by talking about...
We're not making light of that, by the way.
No,
I'm just horrified that these people have any access to the corridors of power at all.
Right.
So,
and we are definitely taking the stand, and you and I have talked about this week, that the difference between an elected official and some guy on Twitter.
Yeah.
And we're not going to be outraged by some guy on Twitter or some woman on Twitter who says something stupid.
I am someone's idiot on Twitter.
Right.
So there we go.
So, but we will hold to account people who think it is within their purview to get elected to public office and then say something like that. They need to be held responsible for their statements and actions. Yeah.
And since Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch now run the Republican Party,
right,
and since the Koch brothers now run their wing of the Republican Party, since it's now just this constellation of moneyed interests, it's not, as Joe Biden says, there is no Republican Party.
Right.
Whereas Driftglass has been saying for years and years, there is no Republican Party. There is no Tea Party. It's just a bunch of special interests bound together by their desire to destroy the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
If you're part of that apparatus, then yeah, what you say in public really counts. And we're going to...
And I want to remind everyone that Joe Biden said that in the context of winning the 2014 midterms.
Yep.
That we can do that. It's not... It's stupid to say, no, we can't.
We're doomed.
It's
possible. It's not...
I'm not Pollyannish about it, but don't give up now, for heaven's sakes.
But Blue Gal, liberals are just as bad. Democrats are perhaps even worse on some matters.
No.
No, really?
No one is worse this week than Georgia Governor Nathan Deal.
Honestly, yeah, really?
No one in my book is worse than him.
I will go toe-to-toe with you on that. But you put yours on the table. I'll show you mine.
Okay.
Care. How's that?
Nathan Deal wants to fix health care.
Oh, that's nice. That's good. He wants to fix it. That's great.
His state isn't taking the Obamacare expansion of Medicaid. And he also thinks, one of the problems is that these poor people can go to the emergency room.
Uh-huh.
And he wants to get rid of that.
Because of freedom?
Because the government shouldn't be paying for people's health care, period. And Wonkette said, this is now literally, we think poor people should die in the street. Even Reagan had more compassion than that. And this is a Reagan-era law passed in 1986.
Yeah.
This is a Reagan's solution is people who have a healthcare issue can go to the emergency room.
And that's fine.
That's fine. And I wanted to bring to our attention an email from our friend Sam, who knows a lot about healthcare policy. My understanding is he has written to us, and actually he had audio on the podcast about breast cancer and insurance many months ago. But he wrote to us this week about this story about Nathan Deal. And said, increased ER use with insurance, including Medicaid, is a good thing. It's better than staying home because you're afraid of what the bill will be. What would be better than good would be for hospitals to establish primary care practices, and in our house we call that doc in the box, down the hall from the ER to provide coordinated care to people who seek care at the ER for lack of an alternative. So if they show up at the ER, you say, you've got a sprained finger. We've got a doc in the box down that way that will take care of you, and you don't have to use emergency services for this. But there's no structure by which the the hospital will get paid for that. The hospital gets paid for ER care by the state.
Yeah.
Under
Which is
Reagan's law.
The most expensive and the least efficacious of all medical care is emergency.
This is the part that amazed me about Sam's email. Uh-huh. And I'm sure he's right about this. This brings me to my pet peeve. Emergency room care is the cheapest care for hospitals. It's the cheapest in the sense of the lowest incremental cost to the hospitals. ER care seems expensive because it is pricey.
Yes.
There's a difference between expensive and costing a lot.
That's right.
And the reason it costs a lot is hospitals can charge a huge markup.
Yep. Yep.
Over what it actually costs them because they can. The demand is inelastic.
Right.
Somebody comes to the emergency room, it's because they have an emergency room. If they're in the car accident, they need hours of surgery. It's got to be there. And that's costly. Why do I assert that emergency room care is the cheapest care for hospitals? Because hospitals don't establish primary care practices down the hall. Doing that would raise the hospital's costs to the hospital, not lower them. And that explains why hospitals haven't gone nuts over these states that won't take Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
If the state continues to be willing to be on the hook for ER care for poor people, which Nathan Deal's trying to get out of now in Georgia.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of understanding that by giving poor people Medicaid, and I love what was on the Daily Show last night, we can't afford it. What? The federal government's going to pick up 100% of the cost to your state for the next 3 years. So you can't afford zero.
Yeah.
You can't.
I want to interject here just as a sidebar for who are the horribles this week. This is not a regular feature we do. We don't do the worst people in the world, but
no, we don't. But as long as you have somebody worse than Nathan Deal?
I have two, actually.
Oh my God.
As bad or worse. And by the way, if you haven't looked up John Stewart on Dick Cheney.
Oh yeah. Well,
it was hilarious. You know,
we both applauded at the end of that segment
because he used the opening. You know, the U.S. military is as big as the next 13 most
17 most countries combined. Yep.
And then blah blah blah. Dick Cheney said the awful, unforgivable, truly wretched things he said,
mm-hmm.
and then. About Barack Obama wanting the military doesn't want us to be a strong country. He just wants people on welfare. He just wants to give people food stamps.
He'd rather spend money on food stamps than the U.S. military.
Because of the budget. And then we cut to, because his John Stewart's interns were busy little beavers, talking about, here is footage of Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney proposing a 25% cut to the military budget. And, you know, I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. Force reduction and closing things, that's what we have to do. And the last slide was, if Dick Cheney's not just a hypocrite, he's a bigger hypocrite than the next 13 hypocrites combined.
Yeah, 17 hypocrites combined.
But they're going to keep putting a microphone in front of him. So look that up as a reference point. I want to talk about, just briefly, since you're talking about Medicaid, I hadn't planned to do this, but Josh Miller.
Okay.
Representative Josh Miller from the great state of Arkansas, who was on the Chris Hayes show.
Oh.
And who survived apparently a fairly catastrophic car accident because he had Medicaid.
Wow.
And now wants to cut Medicaid.
Wow.
And his answer to the pretty basic question, why do you want to cut the program that saved your life, mm-hmm. was the most rambling, incoherent. Guess which party he is, by the way.
Yeah, guess which party.
It was the most amazing inbred word salad hillbilly bullshit you've ever seen. I mean, mm-hmm. he was just very grateful and for the great people of the great state of Arkansas who support him. And it was really great, but you know, we really can't afford it because freedom. And it was a really simple question. This program literally saved your life,
mm-hmm.
but you want to cut it for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And the short answer is actually the same one that was surfaced on the Jon Stewart show. It's because basically I don't know those people.
Right.
You know, those aren't my people.
No, and it's tribalism, too.
Yeah.
Those people. Yeah.
It's the answer the governor gives when on The Walking Dead. See, I knew I'd sneak in a Walking Dead reference.
Everybody take a drink.
The answer the governor gives to Herschel when he's holding Herschel's daughter's hostage. And Herschel asks him, look, you got a daughter. You know what it's like to lose a daughter. I'm about to lose a daughter if you do what you do. How can you do that knowing that you're going to inflict on me the kind of pain that you're desperate to avoid and you've been through? And the governor answers, because she's not mine.
Yep.
And that's absolutely, as simply put as I know how to put it, exactly how Republicans think. They're not my people, so fuck them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would throw him out there. And I would also like to put in a dishonorable mention. I'm not sure we're quite there yet in our notes, but to the Republican Republican senators, the Senate Republican Caucus.
Yep. Get to that right now. Go right ahead.
I just had to stop and take in the horror of what they were doing. It was quite remarkable. And I will turn to Brother Charlie Pierce, who brought this to my attention. Essentially, there was a bill which was very carefully crafted by the great and good Bernie Sanders of Vermont to provide $21 billion in new veterans benefits over the next decade.
Mm-hmm.
Now, veterans benefits, military spending, support our troops is pretty much...
I thought that's what Dick Cheney was talking about. Instead of food stamps, we're going to give some veterans some help, right?
That's the watermark on every Republican letter going back as far as I can remember. I mean, these are the people who punished Bill Clinton for not supporting the army enough, who punished Barack Obama because he doesn't love America enough. Mm-hmm. These are the super patriot assholes who run the Republican Party and who are perfectly willing.
Dick Cheney got really rich off the Iraq War.
Yes, he did. And these are people who are perfectly willing to send troops off to die for Dick Cheney's lie.
Yep.
But if you don't wear your goddamn flag pin, you can't be president.
Mm-hmm.
So these are those people. So here you go. This is a pull it up or shut up moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a $21 billion benefit that would benefit all kinds of things having to do with veterans' wounds, veterans' rehabilitation, including covering in vitro fertilization for veterans whose wounds prevent them from, as Charlie Pierce put it, conceiving a child in the usual manner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much a no-brainer, right? Pro-military, pro-life, support the troops, and guess who killed it?
The Republican House. Senate.
Senate Republican. There were only two Republicans who were willing to vote with Sanders, and the bill died a procedural death. However, during the discussion, they did manage to bring up a lot of bullshit about the budget. There was also apparently a lot of time spent debating Benghazi.
During the debate on veterans benefits, can bring up Benghazi.
Yeah. And of course, let's also throw in some sanctions. They wanted to add an amendment to put sanctions on Iran. Because
you know what? I found out why they want to do that. I found out something really interesting about why Iran is now so important to members of the Republican Congress. I found out this week that Congress has taken more free trips in 2013 than any other year since Abramoff.
Really?
You know what the number one country foreign trips for fact finding?
I'm guessing it's not India.
Nope.
Probably not some godforsaken poor sub-Saharan African country.
Nope.
No place in South America for the shooting.
It's not a Pacific island, and it's not Haiti.
Is it a country that was founded in 1940s?
Yeah.
Thereabouts?
Yeah.
Would it be Israel?
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
And I wanted to read this quote from, National Journal says, "The reality is that lobbyists who legally cannot buy a lawmaker a sandwich can escort him to Israel, all expenses paid by the lobbyist."
Yep. And you know what? I have no problem with my elected representatives going on fact-finding trips, even if they play a few rounds of golf. I really don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't bother me. What bothers me immensely is when presented with an opportunity to actually live up to not my rhetoric, because I'm an evil liberal who hates America, obviously. I mean, Republicans told me that for a decade or more, that I hate America. I am a cut and run. I don't support the troops, for God's sakes, because you're an awful liberal.
Right.
Presented with an opportunity to just live up to their own fucking rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans stabbed it in the back and left it to die.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that the inbred imbeciles in their district and in their states will not make them pay any price for it.
Right.
Because they can just say they ran on Benghazi.
Apparently the editorial boards of their flyover newspapers, as we discussed last week, the editorial pages of these newspapers are conservative.
Of course.
And they're going to bring up Benghazi and the IRS, but they're not going to bring up, Phil Gingrey. Representative Phil Gingrey of Georgia, who's a Georgia peach, as you pointed out to me earlier today.
He is Georgia peach.
He took a free trip, and he was supposed to report it on his 2011 fiscal year report.
Disclosure?
You are required to disclose if you take a free trip with a lobbyist. Okay.
Yeah.
He neglected to report on one of his trips, but it's okay because he filed an amendment between Christmas and New Year's in 2013 for 2011.
Well, you know.
So his free trip didn't wind up being a factor in his reelection campaign in 2012. And he filed the amendment between Christmas and New Year's the following year.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's legal, too.
I'm sure it's legal. I'm sorry, but that was an oversight.
Yeah. Well, I simply go back to the voters who put these people in office, the people who choose Mitch McConnell and say, yeah, that's the guy I want. They're the ones, those individual citizens in those states are the ones who are responsible for gutting this veterans bill. Mm-hmm. The individual citizens who voted Josh Miller into office are responsible. The people of that state are responsible for electing governors and representatives who let them die in the streets because they're poor. They are responsible for it personally. And I wish there were a way to sequester them and let them live in their own little Randite fantasy horror show without bothering the rest of us. But unfortunately, we're stuck with them as fellow citizens. Their screw-ups become our messes that we have to clean up.
Well, and one of the ways that we have lost the debate on revenue and on spending and on helping people is because, and there were several stories about this week, about how, you know, tax cuts for businesses.
Yeah.
And this tax program that was dead on arrival from a Republican House committee saying, here's your comprehensive tax reform that you've been putting a magic asterisk next to
for years.
5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Eventually, we're going to have a tax proposal. And by God, it's going to be great.
It's going to be great. It's going to close those loopholes.
And guess what? One showed up. I'm not happy with it. I thought it sucked. But every Republican.
Closed loopholes.
Well, yeah. And it was immediately. Dead
on
arrival.
They ran away from it.
Yeah, they ran away from their own bill. They ran away from their own bill, the one they've been promising to deliver for years, just like they run away from their own quote unquote healthcare reforms, which are nothing. I mean, they really don't have anything because, and here's the problem, the minute you open that door to actually discussing the mechanics of tax policy or the mechanics of healthcare.
No more free trips for you.
Well, then you have to talk about actual outcomes.
Yeah.
Then you can't just run around waving your dick in the air screaming Benghazi and tax cuts and deregulation and freedom. Then you actually have to say, okay, here's my proposal.
Your loophole is going to be cut. Yeah.
Your loophole. And here's my healthcare proposal. It provides healthcare for 3 million people who don't have it right now. 4 million people. Of that number, the actuarials tell me 40,000 of them will die if they don't have this. I'm just picking that out of the air.
Yep.
What is your proposal for making sure those 40,000 people don't die? And that's where debate breaks down, because there is no Republican plan for anything remotely related to that. They are and that's why you can't bait them into, trick them into, cajole them into actually debating anything. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But there is no plan behind the bumper sticker.
Right.
And so there's no – this is why when Josh Miller, I hate to pick on him, of Arkansas, the great state of Arkansas, went on the Chris Hayes show – Chris Hayes like asked him three questions, and it was this bumbling, stumbling, half-witted, freedom-laced bullshit answer, because there's nothing behind the eyes. There's nobody home anymore. And so it doesn't surprise me when somebody actually takes the trouble to put together a tax plan and the entire party bails on it. The people who've been running on it bail on it.
Yep.
So anyway, as you were saying, you're going to have to close loopholes and do all sorts of things.
You're going to have to do these things, and everybody ran away from it.
Uh-huh.
But – the liberals and let me just say what I mean by liberals is Bernie Sanders, okay?
Yes.
And Elizabeth Warren.
Because one of our listeners corrected us on the use of progressive and liberal. So.
Yeah, well, okay, and I'm going to get into that in a minute. not to beat up on any of our correspondents, but
no, we love our correspondents.
We love our correspondents.
We do.
But this question of tax cuts versus earmarks that got Republicans love to give away money.
Yes.
Government money. They love to give away government money in the form of tax cuts. Tax cuts pay for themselves.
That's your money.
Right. But it's not going to me. It's going to ExxonMobil. And so we have ceded that part of the debate to Republicans, in that if there is a program that's going to create jobs, that's wasteful government spending. But if I get jobs in my district by giving tax cuts, then I'm a good Republican.
Yeah.
And it's the same to the company. It's the same to whether you give them a grant or give them a tax cut. That goes into their budget exactly the same way. It comes out of the budget exactly the same way. It's a reduction in revenue.
Yeah.
And but they win because tax cuts, everybody loves tax cuts. People don't like government spending.
And let's be really clear about this. If you haven't already, good listeners, go look up the two Santa Claus theory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A guy named Jude Wanniski. And go look up Tom Hartman, who talks about this at least once a month for the last 70 years.
Yep,
it never leaves sort of the liberal ecosystem because it's a very uncomfortable subject for anyone outside that universe to talk about. And once you start talking about the sort of long range plan mm-hmm. that Republicans have to destroy this country, mm-hmm. it makes people really uncomfortable to talk about that in nice, polite pastel tones on NPR or on Meet the Press, where we all are very quiet and reasonable. And of course, nobody's really evil around this table. There's no, out of the heartland, out of the fringes, those people are crazy, but none of us here are crazy. But if you look it up, it's very simple. It's the Republican strategy going back at least 40 years now, 30 or 40 years now, from the 70s, that the Democrats are the party of Santa Claus. We give things to people, everything from voting rights to Social Security. That's what Democrats do. Republicans want to take things from you. And somebody finally figured out that saying you're going to take things away from people is a loser. Mm-hmm. So Jude Wanniski came up with the theory that, no, we're giving you tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Be the other Santa Claus. And the Republican Santa Claus is even more ingenious because, I give full props to Chris Hayes for copying essentially what liberals have been saying for years, but he does say it. Republicans don't give a shit about deficits.
Yeah.
Conservatives don't give a shit about deficits. There's no record of any real serious conservative interest in deficits except the minute a Democrat puts his hand on the Bible and is sworn in as president. Then the deficits they didn't give a shit about 10 seconds ago become the most important fucking thing on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Democrat cleans up their mess. And then after that person leaves office or is driven from office or the impeachment attempt fails, they go right back to, George W. Bush ran on getting rid of the budget surplus. And Democrats were like, are you insane? We spent 8 years cleaning up your fucking mess. We finally are in the black, sort of. We still have a national debt, but the deficit is down.
Well, and the prediction was that the national debt would be paid off in 10 years.
Yeah. And by the way, we have some programs we would like to fully fund, like Medicaid, education programs, universal health care. There's lots of things that are broken that need fixing, and now we have the money to fix it. And George Bush ran, that's your money. You get that money back. And boom, right back to deficits. So
let's not forget a Medicare prescription drug benefit that was never paid for.
Wars that were never paid for. Tax cuts that were never paid. Multiple tax cuts that were never paid for. Mm-hmm. And a whole bunch of apologetics from think tanks and op-ed writers in the New York Times. Hello, David Brooks. Who said, it'll be fine. Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah, it's crazy. Democrats are crazy for worrying about deficits. We've entered this whole new era of a new economy. Everything's different now. We're making money hand over fist. You don't need to worry about deficits. Deficits, schmeficits, those are old things. That was the conservative party line in 2000 and 2001 and 2002. Conservatives in 2008, oh my God, where do these fucking deficits come from?
Yeah.
You have to stop Barack Obama, whatever you're doing, and clean up these terrible, terrible deficits that we created. And the point of all of this sort of discursive rambling is that's the plan. The plan is to run up on purpose gigantic deficits when Republicans are in office so that they can then turn around and say, well, you don't have any money for Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then Josh Miller can bumble his half-witted, inbred ass on the television and start talking about freedom of Medicaid. And, we don't want to take Yankee money. And, we don't have no money anyway because we're broke. Yeah, we're broke because your fucking party broke us, asshole. So the plan has always been, because we can't get people to
vote. Well, I want to take away that word always, because I don't think that's the case.
I'm sorry. The plan has been since the 70s.
Yeah, well, or since Reagan.
Since Reagan. The plan has been straight through. We can't get people to vote to destroy Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid or get rid of education funding or any of the things that we don't. We're never going to have people vote to cut their own throats.
So we will starve the beast, quote unquote.
We will run up such ginormous deficits, and then we'll blame liberals. We'll blame welfare cheats. We'll blame brown people. We'll blame hippies. We'll blame Mexicans. We'll blame everybody except the people who did this on purpose, and that's the party of personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so just so we're really clear, this is the plan.
This is the framing of the debate, because Stephen Colbert this week had, did you see this, the FU-435?
Yes.
Employmentator?
Yeah.
Which is a nod to John Boehner's extra engine.
Yeah.
For the fighter that he had built in his district until it was so obvious to everyone and was really getting a lot of press. And then they stopped buying these. They cut that program.
Yeah.
But this military style spending, or, you know, Nixon said, we'll just build some dams if employment stays high.
Yeah. Thank you, Rick Perlstein.
And Democrats and liberals remember.
We do.
That's our defining characteristic. We remember that Reagan raised taxes 11 times.
We remember that Reagan ran up the deficit. We remember that Bill Clinton's base closures were opposed by Republicans on the basis of jobs.
Yeah.
If you cut spending, then all the base jobs and all the surrounding communities, it'll have a devastating economic effect. Okay, so government spending that's completely wasteful, but that creates jobs is a good thing. Apparently, as long as those jobs are hookers and bars around military bases.
Yeah.
But
we never talk about, and of course I understand because of Don Quixote why we never talk about it, but a government program to build windmills and solar panels.
Yeah, no, that's just wasteful. Solyndra. And that's when the debate stops. And that's when the conversation stops, because you realize that person sitting across from you is a finger puppet.
I think even in the time of Reagan and Newt Gingrich, House Speaker Newt Gingrich, there was a push me, pull you between the two Santa Clauses.
Yeah, there was.
That actually the compromising got something done.
Yes.
And now we have a large section of the Republican House that their purpose in being there is to get nothing done.
Well, I mean, there was a willingness on the part of some Republicans to, if you put it to them in stark terms.
You got to give credit to Newt Gingrich for that. I mean, if nothing else.
I give him credit for nothing, just so we're clear. Other than inventing the vocabulary that destroyed our ability to have public discourse at all.
Yeah, that's true.
That's Newt Gingrich. That's on Newt. And the fact that he's the perpetual guest on Meet the Press and now has a job at CNN is the problem.
Actually, no, he did. He was the one who betrayed Gerald Ford.
Yes.
On the budget deal. Or no,
he did.
Excuse me. No, not Gerald Ford. He betrayed Bush 1. Bush won on the tax deal. Remember Bush said, read my lips, no new taxes, which was Peggy Noonan's line.
Yes.
And then they hashed out this budget deal and it did include a tax increase.
Yeah.
And who was the person who stood up and said, I won't vote for it?
Ted Cruz?
Gingrich.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, same guy.
Same mind, different body.
And Bush 1 said, you know, you're killing us. You're really making it impossible for us.
Yeah, but I'm advancing my own career, and that's really the
important. That's exactly right. I'm going to fundraise off of this for the rest of my life.
but there was a time when the patina of respectability.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they were ever respectable. I'm not willing to acknowledge any virtue to conservatism at all as it's practiced in America in the last 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
There is, and we're going to get to that in just a minute about conservatism has never been what it has purported to be. Yeah. But there was a time when you could say, look, if you do this, lots of people are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Except, of course, AIDS, which we were not allowed to talk about during the Reagan times. And you could sort of shame people into funding things that would help people not get killed or let them have food on their table or whatnot. But we've really seen very much like a little discursive. I promise to get back on track. But the Catholic Church, the way the Catholic Church whipped itself into an inquisitional frenzy took multiple generations.
Yeah.
Each generation had the reasonable pope. I'm not going to name names, but had someone in the central authority who was like, well, we can't really go that far. We can't kill people. And then you had popes, or you had bishops, and you had priests out in the hinterland
killing people,
preaching mob rule.
Yeah,
because they were doing was taking what the pope was saying, what the Catholic doctrine of the time was, and applying it directly and saying, no, the implication of our church is that we get rid of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next generation, the crazy priests from the hinterland became the pope.
Yeah,
and it gradually ratcheted up and up and up, with the most extreme people coming to power generation after generation. The Reagan babies, the people who came into politics believing government is always the problem, now run the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And they are perfectly willing to let any number of people die. It doesn't matter as long as they're not their people, as long as they're not part of their tribe, in the name of freedom and deregulation and whatnot. And it doesn't matter if it's coal ash in your water or fracking on your land or you can't breathe your air or you ain't got no jobs or you have no you can't visit a doctor. They don't care. And they have enough people in their party who are willing to push that along until it breaks the country and then feed off the corpse that they have now become the problem. The single most important problem in our politics right now is that one of our two major political parties is crazy. Mm-hmm. And we can debate all day long about how Democrats should reform and how we should do better and we should be disappointed in the way Barack Obama is handling things and isn't it terrible the way the NSA is behaving and you'll get no disagreement out of me. But none of that happens as long as there's a wolf waiting at the edge of the forest to kill you every time you stray out to try to fix one of these problems. First, you have got to get rid of the wolf. And I have great respect for wolves. I'm using them metaphorically. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to...
I want to just briefly talk about the email that you got about nomenclature.
Yes.
And we do try to be careful in our language and wherever possible.
One of us does. I don't. One of us does.
I want to send a message not to any of our correspondents or listeners, because that's not, I'm not talking about them, but I'm talking about certain liberal columnists in the media and in the blogosphere.
Yeah.
Here's my message to you. Stop masturbating.
Yes. No. Or switch hands. At least switch hands, people. At least go for a little bit.
We've had.
Yeah.
I have read this week. Questions like, has the American left ceased to exist as a viable political force by surrendering its power to a corporatized Democratic Party?
Yeah.
Don't use the word liberal socialist when you mean economic progressive.
Uh-huh.
We're moving from a Euro-communist to a German socialist union paradigm.
Yeah. And at that point, I changed from the History Channel. there's a place for that. There's a place for...
If we screw up and say something that clearly is... misspeaking, write us and call us on it by all means.
We will not correct it necessarily, but we will muck you on the air. No, seriously, the part of being a liberal and a progressive is that
and a Democrat perhaps
is you have a negative feedback loop in your brain. You accept negative feedback, you accept criticism. Now, I'm Irish and of a certain age, so I will see you and be bitter about it for a few days or weeks, maybe for 20 years. Yeah. But eventually, I will acknowledge that when I was wrong, I was wrong. But I don't want to argue over trivial things. And I know that everyone has their own definition of trivial.
Right.
And well, I don't mean to...
I agree with the people who say... don't overfocus on elections and personalities. Let's stick to issues and really take a long view.
Yes.
Things are bad right now. We've lost union power to make things happen.
Right.
We have an opposite political party that we cannot debate with to get anything done.
Right.
There are bad things going on. But I love that. I can't remember the exact quote, but the optimism is a political act. Do you remember that quote?
I do. I don't remember where it came from, but I do remember it. Yeah.
I can't. It was in The Sun, the magazine The Sun, but it was optimism is a political act. You commit to waking up the next morning and working to make the world a better place. And if you're busy discussing semantics all the time, you're not doing that. You're not making the world a better place. Or if you're just trying to win presidential elections and that's it. Or, you know, I'm really worried about this Hillary thing that we're starting off the presidential campaign exactly the way we did in 2008 of the Hillary Clinton inevitability train, which hurts her.
Well, she will win over the People's Front of Judea, but she will never win over the Judean People's Front because they're splitters. You know, they're just splitters.
They're just a splinter group.
Yeah. Splitter.
Splitter.
From Monty Python. Splitters. Yeah. So, but generally speaking, I think the overall theme we're shooting for, at least today, is focusing on the issues and let those drive your politics and trying to come up with some kind of, I don't know, movement.
Realize where we're winning. This is the thing that gets me about the environmental movement is we forget just how filthy the earth was in the 70s.
Yeah, I don't.
And I don't either.
Yeah.
But really, we forget how much progress we've made on fluorocarbons. We forget how much progress we've made, and we discount it because we want to remain angry and keep pushing.
And there
toward
and they're real things to be
getting
and they're
better.
Real things
never
to be
good
concerned
enough
about.
And I understand that it's never good enough. We still need more, but don't be afraid to celebrate the fact that businesses pressured Jan Brewer to veto that awful bill.
And so when you read in Harper's the article entitled "Nothing Left: The Long, Slow Surrender of American Liberals."
Well, that's what I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
About has the American left ceased to exist as a viable political force? Yeah, yeah.
That's fine. Write that article if you have to, but please stop piling on.
Yeah.
Because it's weird. Because I feel like the sole survivor of the zombie apocalypse. I'm a liberal. I'm not dead.
Yeah.
I still see signs of vitality out there. I still see things moving out there. What I see on the other side is if you haven't checked it out, there's an article in the American Conservative called "The Twilight of the Right," which I thought was hilarious because it came out the
right
day,
at the
death
same
of conservatism.
Time as these other articles on the left. Yes,
literally the same day that liberalism's over. So apparently conservatism died, fell off of Mount Reagan, and its rotting corpse killed liberalism. So. I guess I can't quite follow the logic, but if you haven't read, there's the reason we'll get to the reason for this in a second. And cause I feel I tell
you know
people,
what, there's naval gazers on both sides. Drifting.
There certainly are. and you know what, there are places where both sides really are equally guilty. Yeah. I will acknowledge that. I don't like to dwell on it because it gives people an excuse to say, I told you so, and walk away. Media nepotism, political nepotism, dynastic politics. There's an article in the Daily Beast about the Democrats have finally joined the Republicans in nepotistic, politics
and
media.
Really?
Like, really? Are you kidding me? I'm from Chicago, man. We pioneered nepotism. Yes. We were there way before anybody else. We were the acoustic version of nepotism and cronyism way before the electric, modern instruments were used. We have, if you go to Mike Royko's book, Boss, and open it up, you will notice that the last names really haven't changed that much.
No.
It was 40 years ago that was published, I think 40 or 45 years ago. But the last names haven't changed all that much.
Trust
because
me, the lieutenant governor's last name is Madigan.
Yeah. Well, the lieutenant governor's name is Simon.
Oh, Simon now.
Attorney,
that's right. Paul Simon's
attorney,
daughter.
The state's attorney is Madigan.
Yeah.
And it goes on and on and on and on. So I will absolutely agree that when it comes to getting your kids rich and getting them jobs.
Well, progress is that the daughters now have a chance at a job.
Yeah, that's
too.
True. That's true. but and so, yes, there are certainly places where this is absolutely the case.
Mm-hmm.
But it is my contention, and you are free to disagree with it, but I'm not going to be persuaded out of it, that until we get rid of the bloc that is the Republican Party, get rid of them, no progress will be made. I think it is vital to have spirited public debates on public issues, on environmental matters, economic matters, jobs, schools, you name it. We need to have a vigorous public debate. And that is as old as the Republic. That desire to thrash things out in public among people of goodwill. But one of our two major political parties has chosen a strategy of destroying our ability to have any debates at all.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they are allowed a place at the table, we will continue to not be able to talk about important things because they will simply scream Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi and bring everything to a halt.
And in the meantime, with them throwing the Benghazi cinder block into traffic, you have David Gregory on the ground saying, oh, look, traffic is gridlocked. Let's go to the other side of the street and see the gridlock from there.
And without ever pointing the camera up, it's Newt Gingrich.
Yes.
Oh, it's Ted Cruz. That guy is the problem. And so if you get a chance to go over to American Conservative, you won't usually hear me recommending it. But there's an article over there called The Twilight of the Right by a guy named Alan Pell Crawford, who was present at the creation, who was there when the modern conservative movement in America was born.
Mm.
And he has completely thrown up his hands, and he is now willing to admit not only has conservatism died, but he is no longer persuaded that American conservatism as it existed for half a century has ever been a, quote, philosophy of cautious stewardship. The conservatism that David Brooks makes money off of preaching,
mm-hmm.
the conservatism that Andrew Sullivan keeps insisting is out there in the pile of shit, if you just keep looking, there'll be a pony, I swear there will be.
Mm-hmm.
That conservatism never existed in this country, ever. So the idea that we would have a public debate between liberals like me and those conservatives is a wonderful idea, but they don't exist. The conservatives that do exist are monstrous and are devoted solely to burning down any public forum where we could ever have a debate.
I miss that, Driftglass. I would love to have a debate with someone about the dignity of work and how we get people who the conservatives claim are dependent on government for their livelihood into a self-sufficient model of working, and how we do that and get into a debate. Should we have unions again? Should we have, you know, if we're going to return to the 50s, let's really examine the 50s and have a conversation about that with somebody who comes from it from the other side.
Yes.
Would be intoxicating.
Yes.
To have those kind of political conversations.
And that person was John Huntsman.
Yeah.
He didn't last as the saying goes.
Right. Yeah. And the sincerity of that is Abby Huntsman on The Cycle.
On my liberal TV.
On your liberal TV saying, welfare costs too much.
It is both imperative and impossible to have public debates.
Yeah.
The people who've tried, and so my focus, and as warped or as flawed as it may be, my focus almost from the first day I started writing was to get the people out of the way who are breaking our ability to have public debates.
Yep.
And the way you do that is you have to identify the fact that one of our major political parties is cancerous and has to be cut out of the system. I don't mean literally, but I mean you have to stop inviting crazy people on television and treating them with respect. You have to stop debating people who think the Earth is 9,000 years old, because it's not 1870 anymore, and it's not 1962 anymore, and Bill Buckley is dead. It's 2014, and if you still believe there's no climate change, you don't have any business participating in a public discussion at all. If you want to discuss how to address the problem, if you think there's a market solution, if you want to talk about cap and trade, fine. But that debate is never going to happen as long as the debate space is occupied by people who are devoted on purpose with a shitload of Coke money behind them to making sure that no debate happens.
Yep.
Because having no debate, doing nothing, bringing the government to a halt, breaking everything is the plan.
It kills the planet.
But that's the plan. That is their plan. So as long as we keep inviting the arsonists to the fireman's ball, nothing's going to get done. So that's where my focus has been. And admittedly, I have a small readership and there's a handful of liberals out there. But every time someone tries to do that, Mann and Ornstein tried to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly they were disinvited from all the nice parties.
Yep.
If you try to bring up the fact that Republicans are actually worse, conservatism is actually a fraud, you're not allowed to carry that debate into the public square.
I wonder if this guy will be allowed to, because he's an apostate.
Well, we love our apostates.
The way that Andrew Sullivan is an apostate and so forth.
But Andrew Sullivan keeps arguing that liberals are just as bad.
Yeah.
Andrew Sullivan apparently knows of one liberal, and that liberal is Alec Baldwin. And he's absolutely obsessed over Alec Baldwin and what an awful person Alec Baldwin was. He was defending the Duck Dynasty assholes.
Yeah, yeah.
While congratulating MSNBC for firing Alec Baldwin at the same time, because freedom. And so that's the problem. The problem is both that the imaginary conservatism of Andrew Sullivan is given way too much time in the press, and the actual liberals, actual real living American liberals like you and me, in our millions, are treated as non-existent. We're not even here. There's no point in putting a microphone down into the flyover country, because there's nothing out there. There's nobody holding opinions that I can't get by walking across DuPont Circle and talking to Luke Russert.
Can you talk for a minute about Alan Grayson?
Sure.
And he said he talked this week about.
Yes.
Go ahead. I'll let you go ahead and tell the story.
Our story begins not very long ago with a man named Alan Grayson, who is indignant and outraged and freshly reelected to Congress, or elected from a different district. Alan Grayson brought up the subject of Ted Cruz's place of birth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why he did it. I like to think that he did it to highlight the contradiction.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's exactly right.
As they used to say in the 60s. There's a point at which, having spent 5 years shrieking that Barack Obama, who was born in America to an American mother, is not a citizen, and we're not even going to look at his birth certificate, but his birth certificate, well, that's not the long form. Well, the long form is a forgery.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a significant percentage of the Republican Party, mm-hmm. who now turns their eyes to Ted Cruz, who was in fact born in Canada, who was in fact born in another country, to an American mother. Mm-hmm. So he is even less of an American, a natural born citizen than Barack Obama was. The idea that Alan Grayson said, well, let's have a conversation about whether Ted Cruz should be allowed to run for president, basically based on the standards that you yourself have been setting for the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And the reaction from at least one columnist in the Daily Beast was, oh, my God, here come the Democratic birthers, because both mm-hmm. sides. Mm-hmm. And to their credit, the commenters were like, are you insane? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Birtherism is a conspiracy theory that Barack Obama's birth is a secret. And there's an entire industry around cooking up forged documents. Apparently, mm-hmm. in traveling in time, so you can go back to 1960, 1961, and plant stories mm-hmm. About him that comport with where you plan for him to be seen to have been born in 50 years later. So it's this vast communist sleeper cell conspiracy that, you know, because liberals, because, you know, communists, because mm-hmm. he's a socialist. That whole thing is birtherism. The ravings of Donald Trump are birtherism. The mm-hmm. fact that a whole lot of Republicans, elected Republican officials, will not say flat-footed, Barack Obama was born here, let's shut up about this already, move on. Because they know that the mob will eat them alive. That's birtherism. All Alan Grayson was doing was said, fine. Mm-hmm. That's your standard? Great. Let's have a talk about whether Ted Cruz can be president by that standard.
And so, I want to bring up the standard that was held in 2008 with John Sidney McCain III.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Excellent point.
I am looking right now at Senate Resolution 511, which was brought to the Senate of the United States on April 10th of 2008. Uh-huh. Whereas the Constitution of the United States requires that to be eligible for the office of the president, a person must be a natural-born citizen of the United States. Whereas there is no evidence of the intention of the framers or any Congress to limit the constitutional rights of children born to Americans serving in the military or to prevent those children from serving as their country's president. Whereas John Sidney McCain III was born to American citizens on an American military base in the Panama Canal Zone in 1936, now therefore be it that John Sidney McCain III is a, quote, natural-born citizen under Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution of the United States. This was passed by the Democratic House of Representatives and the Democratic Senate. What I find fascinating about this, and I didn't know until I looked it up,
uh-huh.
here are the senators that brought this, that sponsored this bill.
But then, and let's be clear, this is the bill that cleared the way for John McCain to run, to eliminate all questions or any lingering doubts.
Just settle it. It's a settled issue in April of 2008 that he is a U.S. citizen, natural born under the Constitution.
And let's move on.
Sponsored by Mrs. McCaskill, Mr. Leahy, Mr. Obama, Mr. Coburn, Mrs. Clinton, and Mr. Webb, and uh-huh. reported by Mr. Leahy without amendment.
Uh-huh.
Clinton and Obama signed off on this.
Yeah, because why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't an adult person who was not, again, insane or brainwashed think of this as anything other than a regular order of business? Yeah, okay. So let's get this crap out of the way so we can move on to the important
if
stuff.
If anybody wants to question it, the answer is no.
Yeah. And so,
whereas, you know, a person of color who is born in a state in the United States
to an American mother,
to an American
in the United States.
White mother from Kansas.
Uh-huh.
We never talk about that.
No. Well, that was the variation of the Clinton playbook. That's all that was.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you want to talk about Whitewater 3 or Whitewater 2 or
Whitewater 2, White Harder.
White Harder.
Yeah. you know, get ready for Whitewater 2.
Yeah.
Get ready to, you know, as I said last week, I wouldn't mind relitigating the 90s. I just would like to litigate them first.
Yeah.
I would like for us to actually go back and talk about what it meant to this country to have a party so desperate to overthrow the government that they would impeach, they would hunt, they would stage witch hunts over trivia mm-hmm. that was invented by crackpot right-wing billionaires and plow the earth until they got deep enough to cause Bill Clinton, a sitting president, to have to go in front of a grand jury mm-hmm. and then swear him in and then sandbag him with questions he wasn't expecting. Yep. And then impeach him over not wanting to talk about the affair he had with an intern. Mm-hmm. If you believe that that whole process is acceptable, then you must also agree that the entire Bush administration proved that Republicans should be driven into the ocean. Because there were no hearings.
War criminals.
There were no hearings. There was no impeachment. Any discussion that you disagreed with the president was tantamount to treason during the Bush years. Yep. Put a black guy in the White House, suddenly, boom, it's all back on the table. Mm-hmm. It's all back on the table because that's all they have. So this is the whole notion of holding people to account for their own words. Hold them to account for their own standards. And there was a long list of the things that Republicans swore on their graves of their children they believed when Clinton was president that they immediately jettisoned the minute George Bush took the oath of office. And I was waiting for somebody somewhere to compare and contrast what you said in 1994 with what you said in 2002. Mm-hmm. Nobody did it. That was the job of the press. That was the job of the media. I did it. You did it. Liberals did it. It was called Googling. Looking up shit people said then and now and saying, well, this seems to be in complete contradiction. Explain yourself. But the media refused to do their job. Again, take what the right wing said during the Bush years and compare them to what they're saying during the Obama years. Compare and contrast. Be deferential to the president. How dare you even talk about these things?
But that's why the class of 2010 is so important to the right.
Yeah.
Because they don't have to pretend that they had a pat during the Bush years.
Right. Ted Cruz
wasn't in the Senate during the Bush years. Rand Paul wasn't in the Senate during the Bush years.
And history began January.
History began 2009. Exactly. Exactly. We have to wind up now.
Oh. Really?
I know. It was so fun. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week we are returning to Yoda and Vader, who are the blog and Freuda, who now blogs at Stink. These are his cats, but they've grown up so much, and they're in the bathtub in this picture that we had to show them again because they're huge.
Apparently, that's a thing now.
Yeah, being in a bathtub is definitely a thing at our house.
Yeah,
yeah. Tub water is the best water.
It's like Lourdes, I swear.
You have to go and lick the drain.
I'm healed.
You can send your internet kitty to us, and we need some internet kitties, please, at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. You know we love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, the internet kitties are rooting for Leonardo DiCaprio because they, too, are used to being constantly dissed by the Oscars.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Well, let's skip Science Fiction University this week. I just don't...
Screw that noise.
And we need to say goodbye to Harold Ramis because we're really going to miss him.
We do.
You really think Egon Spengler was the best Ghostbuster?
I do now. because he was the nerdiest of all of them.
He was. He was the scientist, yeah. Harold Ramis also played John Cusack's dad in High Fidelity, but got left on the cutting room floor.
Groundhog Day is the most underrated science fiction movie.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Without the science, there would be no movie, so it is science fiction.
It is inexplicable. You're caught in a temporal loop, and that is absolutely 100% science fiction. So, yeah, it's a wonderful science fiction movie that starts off funny. That's what makes it so cool. It starts off as a joke. Because you know what? It's got Bill Murray in it. It's funny. It's written by Harold Ramis. It's going to be funny. And it is funny. And then it takes this incredibly dark turn.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you're into this truly existential discussion about reality and your personal responsibility and what happens if you can't change anything and being trapped in an identity and not trapped. And what will save you in the end? What is going to save you? Your cleverness? No, you're saved by grace.
Yep.
You're saved by love and you're saved by grace.
And you've killed yourself dozens of times.
Thousands of
in
times.
In this loop. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you're trapped in a temporal loop and you can't get out. And the horror is that you know it.
Yeah.
And there's
yeah.
nothing you can do about it. And what happens to this confident person who gives up?
Yeah.
Who tries everything
surrenders
and nothing
surrenders to grace.
Yeah. Yep. And there is such an incredibly good, dark turn it takes. Not horrific, but existentially terrifying turn it takes is so elegant and so well handled and so deft that I would rank it up there with the best science fiction movies of all time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because it is a science fiction movie.
Rest in peace, Harold Ramis, and our thoughts go to your family.